Well, our subject this morning is along the lines of the manna text and comment. What manner of persons? Or if you like it a little bit longer, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy living and godliness? Fuller text from 2 Peter 3, some of verses 10 through 14. Quite literally, the day of the Lord will have come as a thief, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall be dissolved with fervent heat, and the earth and the works that are therein shall be exposed. Seeing that these things are thus all to be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy living and godliness? Wherefore, beloved, seeing that ye look for these things, give diligence that ye may be found in peace, without spot and blameless in his sight. 2 Peter 3:10 to 14. Now the King James and several other versions, not including Rotherham, say the day of the Lord will come as a thief. But the verb itself is in the future tense of the word meaning to have come. So properly, the day of the Lord will have come as a thief. So one should expect then that people will be able to endure during the day of the Lord. That it won't be simply at the moment it happens and all the Christians are gone away and everybody else is burned up. But the day of the Lord will have come as a thief, in the which the heavens shall pass away with great noise. The heavens, has there been a lot of upset in the ecclesiastical heavens during the past, 130, 140 years? And the elements shall be dissolved with fervent heat. World War I, the purge in China, World War II, ask the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the earth and the works that are therein shall be exposed. That's the word in the ancient manuscripts. What would be the thought of instead of the earth and the works that are therein shall be burned up? In the Greek, it's only a couple of letters change, to change from exposed to burned up. So it's easy to see how it happened. But it's a little bit different thought here. Why would we understand the earth and the works that are therein shall be exposed? Anybody a thought? Okay. The earth and the works therein shall be exposed. What? Teresa?
I'll come.
All evil thoughts of men will be revealed so that people cannot blame God, but they will have to blame themselves for all the wrong that they have brought on the earth. And we can see it happening already now.
You mean WikiLeaks? I'm also reminded of a little cartoon from the Depression years. Wife comes in and says to the husband, there's a man at the front door that says he's suffering from exposure. Husband says, well, one thing's sure, he's either a politician, a financier, or a tramp. But we see the hidden thoughts of people and schemes being exposed and broadcast from the housetops. We think about those TV antennas that stick up above. And the earth and the works that are therein shall be exposed. seeing that these things are thus all to be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy living and godliness? That's the question. And the answer down in verse 14. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that ye look for these things, give diligence that ye may be found in the truth. Well, ought to be that. But the thing he emphasizes is that ye may be found in peace when the world is anything but in peace, without spot and blameless in his sight. Now, we're 8 days into the new year. Have you made resolutions? Made any resolutions? We're 8 days into the new year. How many resolutions have you already broken? Could be a resolution to hold that temper, to watch what one eats, not to be anxious, whatever is the resolution. What can I do better, to try to be found in peace, without spot and blameless in his sight? Now, we've got all kinds of problems today. We live in an age of insecurity. Insecurity in spades. Insecurity does strange things to people. The things that sometimes insecurity causes people to do, testing, 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 to see just how far you can push before you go too far, are so destructive, or can be so destructive. The very thing that one does to try to feel more secure can wind up being something that makes one less secure. It can even cause people to want to make everybody's decisions for them, and even to the extent of being a tyrant to other people, in order to be in control. Yes, we see that a lot in the political world. We also see this in the religious world. Question is, do I see it in my own world? Do I see it in me? And then there is hate. One of the strange things that we've seen, especially in the last year, was that when somebody doesn't agree with the popular idea of the day, he's accused of hate speech. When it appears that it's the people that hate the most that accuse others of hatred. Accusation. The literal meaning of the word devil is the accuser. When you hear somebody accusing, it usually tells you more about the accuser than it does about the accused. The spirit in the world today is accuse others before they accuse you. And lying? Wow, have you ever seen or heard so much lying as you did in the past few years? And it isn't getting any better this year. Yes, each of these can be a problem. It's always a problem if it's in somebody else, but Gesundheit, do I see a problem in myself? That's the place where I want most to look and see how much of these things I have problems with. And what can I do this year, 2017, to resolve problems of insecurity, possibly hatred or vindictiveness, accusation, lying, and many other things that fall short of the standard of a perfect man? Do I see these things in Jesus? And there are some of our denominational friends who say, what was it, WWJD? What would Jesus do? What is our consecrated goal? Ye are an elect race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that ye may show forth the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. That's 1 Peter 2:9. In how many different ways can we preach? How did Noah preach? Do we have any record of his sermons? Do we even know if he gave any sermons? How did Noah preach? He was called a preacher of righteousness. Did he not preach by the righteousness of his day-to-day living? A preacher of righteousness. There's a saying that the way you live speaks so loud I can't hear a word you're saying. So it's what we do, how we act, that is a principal way that we preach to others. One brother says, always preach the gospel. Use words where necessary. Consider that the hope of the church, the future of the church, is to be a royal priesthood. Of the priests. I can think of two. Perhaps you can think of more. The first duty of the priest is sacrifice. And the outcome is the second duty of the priests, and that is the blessing of the people. So, today it is our duty to sacrifice, and tomorrow it will be the blessing of the people. But does that mean, in no sense, we are to do a blessing of the people today? We should bless them in our daily lives. What will they remember us for? Only our words? Now, the people for whom the priesthood will be a benefit will be those of the earth, which is probably 99.9% of all of the people that have ever lived. Now, I don't know what 0.1% would be of 20 or 30 billion people, but that's irrelevant. What the total number is. The vast majority were intended to be here on earth, on a perfect earth with perfect people. But there's a long way to go for that, isn't there? But let's consider what the scriptures have to say about the earthly kingdom. Isaiah 65, verses 17 to 25. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth. Well, remember from 2 Peter chapter 3, the world consists of a heavens and an earth. So we're talking about the new world. I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered nor come to mind. But be ye glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing, and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem, and joy in my people. And there shall be heard in her no more the voice of weeping and the voice of crying. We see that sort of repeated in Revelation, don't we? Around the 21st chapter. There shall be no more thence an infant of days, nor an old man that hath not filled his days. There shall be no more an infant of days. What does that mean? An infant who is years old. What's the word we use to describe that? It could be immature, and maybe a little stronger than that, the imbecile or the idiot. Now, the idiot probably doesn't last very many years, but an imbecile can. Can't do anything about it. He's not mentally capable of it. But there'll be no more somebody who's living, but not really very much alive. Nor an old man that hath not filled his years. Oh, what am I doing in this place? How did I get here? What do I have to look forward to? We could go through Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, and see what it's like, where it says, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, before the days come when thou shalt say, I am old and have no pleasure in them. The grinders be few, can't see out of the windows of the eyes. There shall be no more thence an infant of days, nor an old man that hath not filled his days. For the child shall die 100 years old, and the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed." Now, I think I've said on other occasions, I think that that means that everyone will have at least 100 years in the millennial kingdom. There'll be a few, though, will be childish, not even trying to make any progress, and also a few, the willfully wicked, that will try to oppose everybody else making any progress. I went to school with a few of the former and at least one of the latter. "And they shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree shall be the days of my people, and my chosen shall long enjoy the works of their hands." Isn't this what almost all of the world longs for? Only it's not attainable yet. "They shall not labor in vain, nor bring forth for calamity, for they are the seed of the blessed of Jehovah, and their offspring with them." "And it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer, and while they are yet speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and dust shall be the serpent's food. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, saith Jehovah. Now, I think I tend to remember this as the lion and the lamb shall feed together. But technically, the scripture says the wolf and the lamb shall lie down together, or shall feed together. Now, these days, if the wolf and the lion feed together, it's because if the wolf and the sheep, it's because the sheep is inside the wolf. But in that time, there'll be no more hurt in all his holy kingdom. And another one from the beginning of Isaiah, chapter 2, verses 2 to 4. It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. Now, not just slowly come to it, but flow, like with desire. And many people shall go and say, Come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of Jehovah, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion... what does that make us think of? The priesthood? That's where the priests either lived or worked, depending on your concept of which is Zion. And out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. And by that would suggest Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And he will judge between the nations and will decide concerning many peoples. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. What's going to happen to West Point and Annapolis? You know, in that day you'll be able to take the military reservations and turn them into good farmland or good city land. That will make much more land available for the resurrected world of mankind. Now, somebody might object, do the scriptures contradict themselves? Because elsewhere, I think it's in Joel, it says, Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Both are harmonious if it's one at a time. Today they are beating their plowshares into swords and their pruning hooks into spears. But once the kingdom is established, those things evidently won't all just be buried, but rather the technology will be changed from usages to hurt people to usages to help people. And don't we wish it could be true now? Of course, if they tried that in Israel, what would happen? We know the time is not yet, but the time is coming. Yeah, we've got another plague or two to go through before Armageddon's all over with. But the time will come when people will say in Egypt or in Jordan or in England or in America or Russia, what's this we hear about all of these things in our nation? People are suffering and dying. And we hear in Israel they're coming back from the dead? Maybe we better look into this a little farther and see if we can get on board too. These are people that the priesthood of the coming age is going to need to help, to work with, to bring them back to the standard of perfection that was lost in Eden. Only this time, with a whole lot of experience under their belts. Isaiah 66, 22 to 24. That's the last three verses of the book of Isaiah. Again, the new heavens and the new earth. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith Jehovah, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith Jehovah. And they shall go forth and look upon the dead bodies of the men that have transgressed against me. For their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched. And they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. Here's this part about their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched. In the New Testament, the word for that is Gehenna, the Jerusalem garbage dump, that was kept burning day and night so as to consume the garbage, that which nobody wants to retrieve. And that's the background for it in Mark chapter 9, verses 43 through especially 48. Now we'll return in Isaiah to the 35th chapter. It would be hard not to consider the 35th chapter of Isaiah. This now is a picture of the millennial kingdom. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. With the recompense of God, he will come and save you. Ah, that's the purpose of the vengeance and the recompense, is to rescue the people. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb shall sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out and streams in the desert, and the glowing sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. In the habitation of jackals where they lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes, and a highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the Way of Holiness. Not the way to Jerusalem or Tel Aviv or Los Angeles, but the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for the redeemed or for them. The wayfaring men, yea, fools, shall not err therein. And what is this really saying here? Somehow it's a way for the unclean, and yet the unclean shall not pass over it. Ah, that's easily seen. If in passing over it, the unclean get cleaned up and become clean. That is the purpose of the millennial kingdom. No lion shall be there. Sounds like that eliminates Satan. He's going to be bound. Nor shall any ravenous beast go up thereon. They shall not be found there. But the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of Jehovah shall return and come with singing unto Zion. And everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Not just go away, but flee away. This will be a time for reform of the people. But to do that, wouldn't a priesthood help? Yes, that's what the priesthood is for. We'll add to that chapter 51, 9 through 11. Isaiah 51, starting with verse 9. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of Jehovah. Awake, as in the days of old, the generations of ancient times. Is it not thou that didst cut Rahab in pieces? That's not the Rahab at Jericho. That's more Egypt. That didst pierce the monster. Is it not thou that driedst up the sea, the waters of the great deep, that madest the depths of the sea a way for the redeemed to pass over? And the ransomed of Jehovah shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. It will be a time for reform, but who is going to help them reform? And really, can some of these people that we hear about, and sometimes even see, can they be reformed? Well, there's a suggestion in Ezekiel chapter 18, verses 27 and 8. Ezekiel 18, starting with 27. Again, when the wicked man turneth away from his wickedness that he hath committed, and doeth that which is lawful and right, he shall save his soul alive, because he considereth and turneth away from all his transgressions that he hath committed. He shall surely live, he shall not die. So the wicked indeed can turn around. They can repent. We have some evidences in the New Testament as well. Matthew chapter 11. Starting with verse 20 to 24. This is Jesus speaking, about Jesus. Then began he to upbraid the cities wherein most of his mighty works were done, because they repented not. Woe unto thee, Chorazin! I admit I don't know much about Chorazin. Woe unto thee, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works had been done in Tyre and Sidon, which were done in you, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. So there are degrees of tolerability in the day of judgment, all right. And thou, Capernaum, we know a lot about that city. Thou, Capernaum, shalt thou be exalted unto heaven? Thou shalt go down unto Hades. For if the mighty works had been done in Sodom, which were done in thee, it would have remained unto this day. But I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for thee. Again, degrees of tolerability. Just a little side note, I remember some years ago, one of the brothers saying that Capernaum was to go down to hell. He says, and I've gone over to Israel, and I've walked through Capernaum, so I've walked through hell without even getting the soles of my shoes warm. And chapter 27, verses 3 to 5. We talked talked about Tyre and Sidon. Tyre is the one that's ethnically the same as what's now Tunisia and Rome. And Tiras on the west or southwest coast of the Black Sea. And then Sodom and Gomorrah, Adma and Zeboim. Now we take a look at someone else, Judas. 27:3-5. Then Judas, who betrayed him, he saw that he was condemned, that he, Jesus, was condemned, repented himself, and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood. But they said, What is that to us? See thou to it. And he cast down the pieces of silver into the sanctuary and departed, and he went away and hanged himself. We don't tend to have a very good opinion of Judas, do we? Judas' heart was obviously not right. But yet, you can make this much of a case for Judas. He learned that money isn't everything. It was kind of an expensive lesson, wasn't it? It cost him his life. But at least a case can be made that he has learned the value of money, that relative to other things, it's not worth much. But how about those priests who said, What does this matter to us? Let's take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 2. 1 Corinthians 2:7-8. Seven for context. We speak God's wisdom in a mystery, even the wisdom that hath been hidden, which God foreordained before the worlds unto our glory, which none of the rulers of this world hath known, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. Oh, so if they had had more knowledge, this gross sin is one they would not have committed. Maybe then there's hope, even for these chief priests. That brings us to the end of the Old Testament, Malachi, the last three verses, Malachi 4:4-6. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, even statutes and ordinances. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and terrible day of Jehovah come. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. This last part, there's different opinions, at least two among Bible students. Is the earth to be cursed or not cursed? I would think here from this, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the great and terrible day of Jehovah come. Does this mean physically Elijah? A Hebrew can understand this more easily than a European can. But Elijah was a type of someone. You can pick either type of Christ and the church, or perhaps just the church. Either way, the Elijah class has been here through the gospel age, has not succeeded in turning the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to the fathers, not yet. But in the coming age, that will be accomplished in the thousand-year kingdom of Christ. And therefore, I think that is what is meant by smiting the earth, that because the Elijah class will do its work in the thousand-year kingdom of Christ, the earth will not be smitten with a curse. And the last chapter in Zechariah, we have verses 16 to 21. Zechariah 14, 16 to the end. It shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations that came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, Jehovah of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whoso of all the families of the earth goeth not up unto Jerusalem to worship the King, Jehovah of hosts, upon them shall be no rain, no blessing. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not, neither shall it be upon them. There shall be the plague wherewith Jehovah will smite the nations that go not up to keep the Feast of the Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that go not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So what's that saying? First approach is, if they don't come up, if they don't try to come into harmony with the kingdom arrangements when Armageddon is over with, and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses and David and Daniel have been resurrected, upon them will be no blessing. The rain brings the food. Without the rain, no food. Except Egypt. Egypt isn't watered by the rain, but by the spring inundation of the Nile. The Lord has that taken care of. This shall be the punishment of Egypt. If the family of Egypt go not up and come not, neither shall it be upon them. There shall be the plague wherewith Jehovah will smite the nations that go not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. In other words, if the carrot doesn't work, then the shoe will. And then we continue in verse 20. In that day there shall be upon the bells of the horses holy unto Jehovah. Does that sound a bit like the golden seal in the forehead of the high priest representing the Holy Spirit? And the pots in Jehovah's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. That's a step up. Yes, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holy unto Jehovah of hosts. And all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and boil therein. And in that day there shall be no more a Canaanite in the house of Jehovah of hosts. What is it that Canaan was noted for? They were merchants. What do we think about Europe and the Americas these days? A merchant nation in each case. So we have a little bit of background for what Jesus did in Matthew 21, and we'll turn there. So, and in that day there shall be no more a merchant in the house of Jehovah of hosts. So it gives us a little background for what Jesus did in Matthew 21, verses 12 to 14. And Jesus entered into the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers, and the seats of them that sold the doves. And he said unto them, It is written, My house shall be called a house of prayer, but ye make it a den of robbers. And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them. That will be the work of the kingdom. It will no longer be a world of merchants, but a world of healing the people. Now, how will the world be helped by us? Well, people look to great leaders and to good examples. Ask the Jews today, do they not look to Moses as the great hero of their ancient history? He was a great hero of the ancient history. Now, of course, Moses said that the Lord your God will raise up unto you a prophet like unto me. Him shall ye hear. They haven't heard him much during the gospel age. A few have. But during the kingdom age, the millennial age, the whole world will hear him. We look to that prophet, Jesus. But we also look up to John, to Paul, to Priscilla. Remember Priscilla and Aquila? She appears to have been the one who did the job more than he, because she was more able. To Martin Luther, the day star of the Reformation, Brother Russell, Brother Woodworth, you can name one after another after another. Will the world look to remember you and me? That is the question. Now, what we can do is not limited to the words that we say, though yes, they can be helpful. They should be helpful. But the world is observing what we do and say. I think we all know, brethren, at one time or another, who have been role models for the world. So many of the world may say, yeah, you did okay, but you didn't have anything like the trials I had. How about Ryan and Lisa Hangs? They wrote that article, lovely article, it's in the Herald, the end of last year, on overcoming disabilities. Do you hear them complaining? By the way they have taken their experience, they are an example to the whole world. There are others, a couple of brethren west of the Mississippi River. Time came when there was a chance to go from several radio stations broadcasting the Frank and Ernest to broadcasting on the national network. But it would require an enormous amount of money and a full year's contract. Two brethren pledged their entire business to make it happen. And if others hadn't contributed, they would have lost all, they and their families. I remember one telling, I think it was Brother Woodworth telling it, that on the 9th month of the contract, they didn't have money. They would have to cancel the contract and suffer the loss. And when he opened the envelope, it said, you have fulfilled your 9 months, and the rest of the discount will be applied for the next 3 months to finish your contract. And I'm sure each of us can think of one or two or more others who have, by their deeds, by their actions, the example they have set, preach to us and to all the world that have come in contact with them. And I conclude with Edgar Guest, Sermons We See. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one should walk with me than merely tell the way. The eye's a better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example's always clear. And the best of all the preachers are the men who live their creeds. For to see good put in action is what everybody needs. I soon can learn to do it if you let me see it done. I can watch your hands in action, but your tongue too fast may run. And the lecture you may deliver may be very wise and true, but I'd rather get my lessons by observing what you do. For I might misunderstand you and the high advice you give, but there's no misunderstanding how you act and how you live. When I see a deed of kindness, I am eager to be kind. When a weaker brother stumbles and a strong man stays behind, just to see if he can help me, then the wish grows strong in me to become as big and thoughtful as I know that friend to be. And all travelers can witness that the best of guides today is not the one who tells them, but the one who shows the way. One good man teaches many. Men believe what they behold. One deed of kindness noticed is worth 40 that are told. Who stands with men of honor learns to hold his honor dear. For right living speaks a language which to everyone is clear. Though an able speaker charms me with his eloquence, I say, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day.